this discussion builds on things that are part of the Navy's transformation toward open systems, but we extend the end of it to think about, well, where could this take us next? So we know we can do open systems. We know we can improve competition and use modularity and bring in innovation. But if we continue to think it through, and taking off a little bit from the Chief of Naval Operations thoughts on payloads and platforms, you know, make the ships and aircraft more malleable to bringing in new technology, then why couldn't we use more common technology across these different, as we call them, platforms in the Navy, and then start managing our portfolio more progressively, more thoughtfully, so we don't end up all with all these little systems all over the place, each in their own individual stovepipes, but we maybe collect them together a little bit more and be more efficient. Not only efficient in how we bring innovation to the field, but also more efficient in how we do life cycle support. With fewer systems to support, more product lines, more common products, we might have a more efficient life cycle support, training, and other things that could improve our ability to bring innovation with the money we have. Mm-hmm. That's the piece that's kind of off the reservation a little bit, that's extending the thoughts of things that we're progressing towards, that my co-author and I felt it's time to start talking about the next step.
Your co-author is Captain Paul Van Bentham, U.S. Navy, and we'll put a link to this and the event that you presented at at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. You write here that you're talking about a product line concept that can establish reusability of warfighting capability across platform types, while bringing third parties to the marketplace to add new performance features. Now, you touched on, I assume, the performance features part when going for things that are more commonly found that aren't Navy specific. Tell me about the reusability, easy for me to say, component of that, because that sounds like it's potentially the most attractive to the Navy, but potentially something that would make the vendors that work with the Navy a little bit queasy.
Well, actually, this is something we've seen as a trend going on in the commercial sector very strongly for quite a long time now. In fact, Paul Van Bentham just came from the car industry. And so he very well understands what's happening with General Motors and Ford and other major automotive manufacturers, where they're having fewer but more common products that can be applied across more car platforms. Well, we could do some of those same things. But we don't want to do it in a way that restricts our buying practices. We want to have open product lines. That is, they're purposefully built to be deployable on multiple platforms, but they can't be a one-size-fits-all solution. They have to fit onto that kind of a ship or this kind of a ship. They have to be malleable, open to innovation, yet somehow common. Mm-hmm. And the product line methodology that the Software Engineering Institute has been talking about really for 20 years, this is not a new idea, but it's a new way of applying that logic to the warfighting portfolio of the Navy.
The first piece that you presented on was this modularity of systems, and you one of the topic lines here is a high-frequency rhythm for capability insertion. What does that concept mean, Nick?
Oh, I'm hearkening back to my days when I was in PEO submarines, where we started a new program called, at the time we were calling it, the Acoustic Rapid COTS Insertion Program, and it's now known more euphemistically by its acronym, ARCI. Mm-hmm. And we set up a pattern where we were able to deliver new capability every year. Well, for many programs, new capability every year is high frequency. I think, though, that what we're seeing in a lot of the technologies we use day to day, once a year, it sounds like a pretty long time to wait for an update on an app on my iPhone. Now, the systems we create for the Navy are considerably more complex than the apps in my iPhone. Nonetheless, we still need to be able to update our systems more frequently, not just for performance improvement, but also for things like cybersecurity. Those vulnerabilities, those patches, those things we got to do to keep our systems safe and secure, we need to do that more frequently even than once a year. Mm-hmm. So how do we get to a more to a higher tempo of getting those changes to the fleet? That's what I was meaning by higher frequency.
What's the process in determining whether a function or a capability is appropriate for modularity and when it's not appropriate for modularity?
Oh, so at some level, it kind of depends on the program and the product. But really, if you could look at it more from a kind of a market sector perspective, what are the opportunity spaces that industry has to provide? And how big do you want those chunks to be? We can make them smaller and still have different vendors that can apply their solutions to our problems. And so it, you need to bin it on two scales. One is, where are the places the Navy needs innovation? And where are the sources of innovation? And then you can start to scale how big those modules have to be based on your basically our business needs.
Mm-hmm. You write here that a modular acquisition model could be employed on service combatants to capture innovation from a wide variety of a wide array of vendors for software intensive and dynamically changing systems. And that sums up well, I think, the point that you just made a moment ago, Nick. Where does that leave the vendor community who already is engaged with the Defense Department, the Navy, when there's a possibility of a lot of folks coming in that are not currently doing business there, providing a, another level of competition?
So at some level, you know, as a steward of the taxpayer, I'm supposed to provide those kinds of market tensions. That's what we're supposed to be doing. On the other hand, the major defense integrators, those what we've sometimes referred to as prime contractors, we're going to need integration services for a long time. These systems are complex. They're very large in scale. They do very complicated things. And so the integrator role is something that we're going to need for a long time. Really, for the modularity piece of it, we're looking at how do we bring in the non-traditional suppliers to provide innovations at a more granular level. And in that place, I think it's okay for them to be a little uncomfortable. I should be doing my job right.
I mentioned at the beginning that the presentation that you make here is the view of yours and your co-authors, but you cite the view of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics, Frank Kendall, here, who has spoken very eloquently, as well as Secretary Stackley of the Navy, about the need, not just the, it would be a nice idea if, but the need to bring in non-traditional defense contractors into this equation.
Absolutely. Both of those gentlemen have been great proponents of not just improving the Navy's ability to do these kinds of things, but also specifically in using open architecture to get there. So it's nice to have that kind of top cover. And if I could take just a second, some of the top cover that I've had, you know, working this through the Navy, has been my just retired boss, Mary Lacey, who's now comfortably taking it easy. And we'll miss her greatly, and she built a great foundation for us to move forward.
And I have always enjoyed all my interactions with Mary. We talked before we went on the air about the fact that my first encounter with her was when she led the National Security Personnel System effort in the Pentagon. And I wish her well in her retirement. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, a question that you pose to which the answer is fewer. And we'll talk about that when we come back with Nick Girton. He's Director of Transformation in the Office of the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, Test, and Evaluation on In-Depth with Francis Rowe. This is In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. My guest for Pentagon Solutions today is Nick Girton, Director of Transformation in the Office of the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, Test, and Evaluation. And I promised before we took the break, Nick, that I would pose the question to which the answer is fewer. And you write, how many platform-unique systems should we have in 10, 20, 30 years? And that's the answer. Why is it important to move in that direction, do you believe, Nick?
All right. So this is, again, this is the opinion of myself and Captain Van Bentham, that if we look at our portfolio, and I'll quote a colleague when at American Society of Naval Engineers Day, when we presented this paper, one of the flag officer panel, Rear Admiral Lewis, who is the commander of the Space and Naval Warfare Systems Command, opined that we keep a lot of stuff and we don't retire them. We keep them around, and you know, those sustaining costs can be tremendous if we don't think about how do we shape our portfolio more artfully. And so Paul and I suggest that if we think of the total number of programs we have as they are employed capabilities on this kind of an aircraft and that kind of a submarine, this kind of a ship, you know, pick a number, whatever number they are, should that number be growing or shrinking over time? And how would we consider that shape in the portfolio, that trajectory for the number of programs that do potentially very similar things? And we contend that that number should be shrinking, and we should be thinking about how do we shrink it as a part of a strategy going forward. And that's what we meant by fewer. How mm-hmm. do we get more common, open product lines being used across multiple platforms so that we shape the portfolio to have fewer number of systems, yet more access to innovation because we've built them to be open?
So would it be fair and reasonable for that to be one measure of your success, to look 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and say that number's smaller, so we're doing well, or that number's the same, so we have work to do?
I think that if, so again, this is a thought piece, and sure. I'm hoping that this becomes a more a deeper discussion in how we structure our portfolio. But yes, that would be a measure of success, so just looking at the number of named programs mm-hmm. and then think about how many of them are used across multiple platforms.
Is there a limit to the amount of modularity or cross-platform opportunities that you can foresee? Or is this a concept that could eventually turn the Navy into a real plug-and-play type operation?
I think that there are some physics-based problems that don't lend themselves well to scalability. And that's just the very nature of what we're trying to do will help shape that. Like, mm-hmm. for instance, you're not going to put an Aegis radar on the end of a periscope to put on a submarine. Similarly, there are certain types of sonar things that you're not necessarily going to put onto a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are some natural boundaries that will help shape that. But again, those are physics-based things. If we try to do things that just aren't smart and we're stretching the technology in the wrong way and we're actually costing ourselves more money doing that, then we'll find those barriers, I think, naturally.
But yeah, and my sense of that is that those are very logical and they'll present themselves. Obviously, it's not something that you'll get a certain period into requirements development or into execution and say, oh, this isn't working the way that we expected to.
Something that happened very recently, I just read in this morning in the news, is that they're looking at the second of the Ford-class aircraft carriers, the John F. Kennedy, I think. And they had an acquisition problem with the kind of radar they were putting on it. And they're looking at a more common cross-platform radar system that they're going to be looking at for putting on the Kennedy, and then how will that also backfit onto the other large-deck amphibious ships. So those kinds of this kind of radar will work not on this ship, but it can also work on this ship if we just bend it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If we make it configurable as a part of its internal design so it can be applied across multiple platforms.
Mm-hmm. That concept is not just something I imagine that the Navy's exploring either. I mean, the other branches are in the same situations that the Navy is in, cost containment-wise, and I imagine they're trying to do the same kinds of things. Are there best practices for this, for you to be able to work with your colleagues in the other branches and say, what are you learning, what are you learning, sharing ideas, and so on?
Certainly, the Better Buying Power Initiative has been a great opportunity for the services to share ideas that aren't necessarily a part of a joint program.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just getting together, talking about how things are moving forward. The area of better buying power I've been involved in has been in modular open systems, tech refresh, looking at intellectual property, shaping our business through our contracts. Those dialogues across our services lines have been especially fruitful.
We've talked on a number of occasions about the intellectual property implications of open systems architecture. Are there any new developments in that area or any ways that you've come across that ease the concerns of the vendor community that you deal with?
So this is a topic that's growing in ways I couldn't have foreseen when we started down this path.
Mm-hmm.
That it's certainly a very hot topic, but I think I think the last time I was on your show, we talked about a new intellectual property strategy guide mm-hmm. that we had just put out
yes.
for people to use, and that has gotten a lot of legs. And I was just at Naval Air Systems Command yesterday talking with their leadership about how do they more artfully use the government's intellectual property rights without reaching out too far, giving innovation space to the vendor community so they can do internal investments, so they can bring forward commercial products, so we can more carefully think about how to use things coming from the small business community, yet do it in a way that these things plug into an open fabric so that we can make these business choices as we go without having to have the whole system bound up in single business deals.
Mm-hmm. And what's the reception been like that?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so there's a little bit of tension because mm-hmm. we have overplayed that hand in some places and underplayed it in others. And so we have some mixed message with industry, and we're trying to help people understand a more thoughtful, considered approach on that. And it's a bit of a story in the making. Pay attention, more to happen here.
But it sounds like it's headed in a direction where folks will be able to say we're not as uneasy as we've been about this.
I think that
IP is one thing that I hear constantly when right. it comes to innovation, different ways of doing things. Companies are still very averse they get really, really queasy when we talk IP.
Well, yes, especially because, when it comes to having a close relationship to their customer, like most of the defense primes and vendors do with the Defense Department, mm-hmm. There has to be a level of trust. If we're going to share with you certain pieces of information, how are you going to use it? Where are you going to share it? Where should I be putting my investments so that it doesn't become public knowledge, yet how do I advance my product? And if we could do that where we have, sorry to hit this again, but an open fabric, an open architecture that is knowable by many. And that piece of it, yes, we want to disclose everything that it takes to integrate products into our systems.
Mm-hmm.
And simply, that's got to be our business going forward. But that also gives space for industry to come in with innovations that they want to invest in and bring to us, and we can consume them, especially if they're competitive alternatives.
Your wrap-up here, your takeaway, the message that you hoped folks took away from your presentation overall and from the piece, which I mentioned we have linked later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, was what, Nick? What's the overarching message that you want to make sure people take away?
So the Navy is maturing as we consider open architecture, intellectual property, and how we craft our portfolio into more efficient use of the taxpayers' money. And so what I hope people hear is that there's great opportunities for innovation, but it's going to be done in an open way so that we can have more vendors at a more granular level building things that can be applied more broadly.